All right. So thank you, Dr. Stefanko. Good evening. I'm Laura Ladd-Bierman, Executive Director of the League of Women Voters of New York State, representing 50 local leagues and 4,000 members across New York State. As a reminder, the League of Women Voters is nonpartisan and never supports or opposes any candidate or political party. We are pleased to be organizing tonight's debate, and we are greatly appreciative of the help and support from the College of St. Rose for the facility, operations, and live streaming of this event. All candidates appearing on the ballot for the office of New York State Governor were invited to attend tonight's debate. Thank you to the four of you who agreed to participate. And to allow the public to hear directly from you about your vision for New York State.
I'm sorry, who's missing? Sorry.
The format for tonight's debate, as agreed to by all of the candidates, is as follows. There will be no opening statements. Questions will be asked by our esteemed media panelists, Susan Arbetter, Ken Lovett, Decora McIntyre, and Josefa Velasquez. Follow-up questions are allowed, but will be limited to allow for more questions to be asked. Bios about these panelists are in your program. The candidates selected numbers prior to the debate to determine the order of responding. The order is as follows. Howie Hawkins will be first, Stephanie Miner is second, Larry Sharp is third, and Mark Molinaro is fourth. That order will rotate for each question based on this numbering. Each candidate will have 1 minute to respond to the question. There are league members in the front row who are the official timers for the evening. A yellow paddle will be raised when there's 30 seconds left, and a red paddle when the time has expired, and the candidate must stop his or her response. Each candidate also has at their podium two red cards. They may use these red cards during the debate to ask for 30 seconds more to offer a rebuttal or to increase time on a specific question. They are limited to two during the entire debate, however, and the time will be provided to them after all candidates have responded to that question. The additional time cannot be used during their closing statements. Candidates will also be allowed to present a two-minute closing statement after the last question, with the next candidate starting the closing statements. The candidates and campaigns have also agreed to the following rules for the debate, and I am assured that all of you will follow these rules as well. There is absolutely no audio or videotaping allowed by any campaign staff or audience member. A league volunteer will ask anyone seen taping to stop. If the person does not stop, the debate will be interrupted until that person stops taping or is escorted out of the building. I also ask that there's no cheering, clapping, or booing during the debate. This activity takes time away from the debate, reducing the amount of questions and responses. And I think we can all agree we'd like to hear more from each of the candidates. An unruly audience member will be asked to leave, and if continues, will be escorted out of the venue. Finally, a table is in the entryway with campaign literature from the candidates' campaigns. There's no distributing these materials in the venue, but please feel free to pick up the materials on your way out. And before we start the questions, I would just like to ask each candidate to consider this debate as a discussion of ideas. Instead of criticizing another candidate for what he or she has or has not done, let's hear what your plans are to improve New York State if you're elected governor. A civil discourse on ideas would be a nice way to spend the evening. So let's get started. The questions have been grouped into different issue categories, and the first category is concerning economic development. And the first question will be asked by Josefa.
So this goes for Mr. Hawkins at first.
Right.
All across New York City, neighborhoods are continuing to gentrify and rents are skyrocketing. Yet in upstate New York, the economy is still sputtering and cities upstate are failing to attract young people and young families. What are tangible ways to attract young people and diversify the struggling upstate community?
Yeah, young people, a million of them really, have left the state since Governor Cuomo took office. And that's because the cost of living is too high and the jobs, a lot of them are crappy. So we've got to raise wages. We got to invest in the infrastructure that everybody uses and the public services that everybody uses. Fully fund the public schools. Go to 100% clean energy by 2030. That will create hundreds of thousands of good jobs in manufacturing and construction. And that can be done all over the state. We need to rebuild the subway system down in New York City. We need to expand mass transit upstate. We need to build public housing to deal with the affordability crisis. The rent is too damn high. Healthcare costs are going up. We need single-payer healthcare. Property taxes are too high. The state needs to pay for its mandates and then share the revenues like it used to so local government can provide good services. We got to fix our sewer and water systems. We have a water main break
Thank
in Syracuse almost every day.
Thank you. Ms. Miner?
That's an excellent segue, thank you, Howie, to water main breaks. We see that we have two different states here. All of the economic development, 89% is happening downstate. We have economic development programs that have been completely flawed and have not produced any sort of return on investment. We have to eliminate those economic development programs and the bureaucracy, take that money and invest it in infrastructure, traditional infrastructure like transit, roads, and bridges, but new infrastructure like modern broadband so that we can have accessible, affordable access to the internet. This is how you grow an economy, is by building infrastructure systems that everyone can use, particularly young people.
Thank you, Ms. Miner. Mr. Sharp?
Yeah, you're gonna hear a lot the word invest. Every time you hear the word invest, what you should hear is more of your taxes. Every time you hear invest, it means taxes. Everything I tell you will incur no extra taxation whatsoever. You want to make the poorer communities be resilient to gentrification? It's called ownership, and it's called supporting small business. The more ownership we have in poor communities, when they gentrify, they gain. That's what I want. Ownership in their housing, as Howie mentioned, ownership in their businesses by supporting small business. We have to stop bribing big business from coming to this state and instead support small business by doing things like making the taxation simpler, taking care of our workers' comp, making it so that if you're a small business that you sell only locally, you don't have to be in any way, shape, or form beholden to federal regulatory bodies, making it easier for small business, to include small farmers, letting small farmers treat it like small businesses. They get SBA loans. On top of that, why in the world aren't we encouraging things like Bitcoin, blockchain, hemp, cannabis? These are all new ideas that bring the youth back to our state. We do that, we win.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp. But hang on 1 minute, Mr. Molinaro. Josepha would like to do a follow-up.
Oh, please.
So I just wanted to know, how would you specifically attract young families, young communities? You mentioned Bitcoin and all that, but what programs would you put in place?
You have 30 seconds.
Hold on, you said what programs would I put in place?
Or what sort of...
You know I'm a libertarian,
what's your policy?
Right?
Okay, yeah,
good.
Well, what's your policy for that?
It's a program. That's like garlic to a vampire. Anyway, so no. There's no program. What I want to do is I want to say instead, if you're a small business in New York State, I want to make sure licensing and regulations don't stop you. You know there's a license in New York State to braid hair? A license to walk a dog? Who starts walking a dog and hair braiding businesses? People in poorer communities trying to get themselves back on track. When I was a kid in the Bronx, or in the South Bronx,
Thank
that's
you,
what
Mr.
happened.
Sharp.
We do that, and we'll support them.
Mr. Molinaro, would you like the question repeated, or?
Sure, just to.
All right, Josepha.
So all across New York City, rents are skyrocketing, and neighborhoods have become completely gentrified. But upstate New York hasn't seen that happen. You see communities struggle to retain young people and attract young families. What would you do to ensure that New York State as a whole gets its fair share that New York City's having?
You have 1 minute.
First, upstate New York needs to be shown the respect of state government that it hasn't gotten for the last 8 years. And what that means is to make upstate New York more affordable. We start by property tax relief, significant property tax relief. Yes, that requires Albany and New York to pay for the costs that it shifts down onto local governments. But if we want to keep young people in the state of New York, we have to make sure that it's not only affordable, but we have job opportunities, housing opportunities. And what that means to us and to me is, as has been noted, instead of continuing to pay corporate interests, we ought to be investing in city, hamlet, and village centers. So that's infrastructure investment. Yes, it's broadband. Yes, it's water, sewer, street, sidewalks. But in the same respect, it's ensuring that educational outcomes meet economic needs. So that's aligning SUNY and CUNY and community colleges with the economic goals of a region, and then working to ensure that we're growing the jobs necessary to keep kids here. 71% of 18 to 35-year-olds on Long Island say they're going to leave within 5 years. It is up to us to make New York affordable and to link our great assets with our struggling communities.
The next question will be posed by Ken Lovett and will be directed to Ms. Miner.
Ms. Miner, Governor Cuomo created the Regional Economic Development Councils that has different regions of the state competing for economic development money, millions of dollars worth. He's argued that different regions of the state have different needs and that the councils allow for local people to help shape what's best for them. Critics say it's a pork barrel program that's controlled by the governor instead of the legislature. What are all your thoughts on that, and would you continue the program if elected?
No, I wouldn't continue the program, and I know this firsthand. As the two-term mayor of the city of Syracuse, I have one of the poorest census tracts in the country. And I saw juxtaposed between poor people who needed help, these regional economic councils who just continued to give expensive tax benefits to people who, lo and behold, often were campaign contributors. But look at the data from the New York Federal Reserve to the Upjohn Institute. We have seen there has been no benefit from them, no data benefit at all. And yet, we've also seen that they've been mired in corruption. We need to stop picking winners and losers, invest in infrastructure, invest in the things that communities need, like water, like sewer, like making sure that we have safe streets and safe bridges.
Thank you. Mr. Sharp.
You heard it. Invest, invest, invest. You heard it. Every time you hear invest, it means more taxes. That's not what I want to do. What I want to do instead is get rid of the REDCs. They are a bad idea. They are literally a petri dish for corruption. All of these boards and authorities and commissions, there are ways of avoiding responsibility and rewarding party loyalists and rewarding those who give people money. Look at all the people who've been arrested, indicted, all those people who've gone to jail. Every one of them, they're on some kind of board or commission or something like that. That terrible idea, they are a bad idea, get rid of them completely. Instead, why aren't we taking the time to not reduce taxes so that someone else gets it, but how about instead reduce spending? How about instead support our small businesses? If we do that, change licensing, you will find that everyone will grow.
Thank you. Mr. Molinaro?
End the Regional Economic Development Council model, stop cutting checks to corporate interests, and use our resources of state government to partner with local communities all across the state, not only to establish stronger municipal centers, but to ensure that communities are working together. New York's a home rule state, which means economic development and land use is decided by planning boards and zoning boards all across upstate New York, and of course, those within the city of New York. It's important that we use the technical support within the Comptroller's Office and other agencies of state government to really provide the professional support necessary to help communities establish their economic development plans, establish zoning code that supports it, and then ensure that if we're putting dollars on the street, it's actually putting it on the street. Infrastructure, water, sewer, streets, sidewalks. And at the end of the day, communities in this state can't afford to make the necessary upgrades unless New York's a partner. But rather than Albany's economic development approach, which is the governor saying, this is my good idea, now compete to tell me why I'm right, this economic development model is top-down instead of from the bottom up.
Mr. Hawkins.
Yeah, I would shut down the Regional Economic Development Councils. People called them the Hunger Games.
Yes.
But in the end, every region got their money. And the pay-to-play contributors tended to be the people on the councils, and they slapped together proposals, and the money was awarded, but most of the projects have not been done. What we need to invest in is public infrastructure and public services, education, healthcare, and so forth, because those are the public avenues of private commerce on which private business can thrive. And it benefits everybody, not the pay-to-play contributors who are corrupt.
Thank you, Mr. Hawkins. The next question will be asked by Tacora and will be directed to Mr. Sharp.
Mr. Sharp, upstate lawmakers will demand parity, meaning $30 million for upstate if downstate gets $30 million for transportation funding.
Say that one more time, I'm sorry.
Okay. Upstate lawmakers will demand parity, meaning $30 million if for upstate if downstate gets $30 million for transportation funding when it comes to state spending on the MTA. Do you support that? And if yes, how would you pay for it?
Absolutely not. The last thing I want to do is give the MTA more money. The MTA gets no more money. It's a $16 billion boondoggle, and we give them $6 billion every year because they suck. We go, you're terrible, and you can't spend your money, right? Here's $6 billion. We do that every single year. No, I want to raise money through other ways. One of the ways we can do that, there are actually rail lines that go outside of New York City, go to Long Island and upstate New York. Why aren't those freight lines at night? Those should be freight lines. Freight forwarders pay us, they maintain, and guess what happens? The next morning, passengers are on those lines. Why aren't we using our infrastructure and leasing out naming rights? We have all those bridges. There's an RFK bridge. There's a Mario Cuomo bridge. There's an RFK bridge. Why isn't that a Google bridge? Why isn't that an Apple bridge? They'll pay $10, $20, $30 million. We can raise money many different ways and make the MTA self-sufficient without investing or funding in any way.
Thank you. Mr. Molinaro?
Your question was about upstate, downstate parity, and that's the problem with the way in which Albany functions. It's more focused on announcements than outcomes. We need to make New York State function more like a government, a business, excuse me, where you establish outcomes, we evaluate how in which we are going to solve a problem, and you invest the right number of resources to address that problem. You have failing communities upstate. Upstate New York has generational poverty that's gone ignored by this administration and state government, and so we continue to see community after community hollowed out. Downstate legislators may want more money. No more money. We don't have any more money. We're not going to spend more money on things we can't prove the outcomes. When I'm governor, we establish the outcome. We create a metric to evaluate success, and we ensure that if we're spending people's money, that we get the investment on return. If we do not, we don't spend the dollars. And I will veto any effort to continue shoveling cash to the MTA. It is the most bloated, broken, bankrupt public authority in the world, and there are too many people waiting for trains. That is a recipe for disaster.
Thank
Instead,
you.
Focus on
Thank
efficiency.
You, Mr. Molinaro. Mr. Hawkins.
Parity on funding is just arbitrary. We should distribute funds based on need, and obviously upstate has been neglected. And I would say the two-party government has been fiscally irresponsible because they've been saying they've been balancing budgets, but they've run up an enormous debt on infrastructure. 1,837 bridges are structurally deficient. That's a $67 billion bill right there. I'm sorry, the MTA needs money. That's what other governors have done. They pull it out. Cuomo pulls it out for a ski resort, and the MTA is crumbling. It needs $40 billion according to the Fast Forward Plan. NYCHA needs $32 billion over 5 years just to get the rats and the roaches and the lead and the mold out and get the elevators and the boilers and the roofs fixed. That's the kind of investment we should be doing, and the way to pay for it is tax the rich. Their share of income, the top 1%, has grown from 12% in 1980 to 31% today, yet their taxes have been cut, and it don't trickle down
Thank
to
you,
us.
Thank you, Mr. Hawkins. Ms. Miner.
Look, I think parity is an intellectually lazy way to approach government and policies. It's to say, oh, it's equitable if we get the same amount of money. The reality is that we have a hugely diverse state with different regions. You cannot have the same regulatory burden on Brooklyn that you have on Buffalo or on Peekskill that you have in Plattsburgh. We have to understand that we have to look at the needs that our regions have and spend the money to get the outcomes that we want to have growth. The reality is that 89% of our economic development is happening downstate, and one of the biggest engines of economic development is the MTA. It needs to be funded to continue to have state revenue, and to just walk away from it because we don't live downstate does a disservice to what we are, one state. But to say $30 million for downstate, so then $30 million for upstate, will not equate to upstate getting the amount of growth that it needs to make sure that its people are lifted out of generational poverty.
Thank you, Ms. Miner. The next question will be asked by Susan to Mr. Molinaro.
We're going to get a little more specific now. Do you favor a dedicated infrastructure funding source for water and sewer infrastructure projects, sort of like the current CHIPS program for roads and bridges?
Yes, but not on the backs of property taxpayers.
So how do you pay for it?
You pay for it by ending the corrupted pay-to-play economic development scheme that has produced more indictments than jobs, and instead focus those resources on putting dollars into the hands of local decision makers to make proper infrastructure investments. But I wouldn't give municipalities infrastructure dollars without also ensuring that we partner with them with the professional support. Too many communities, dot upstate New York and throughout the state of New York, don't have the professional capacity to develop comprehensive capital plan, infrastructure investment planning. So I want to be that partner to ensure that the staff support, the structural support, and the power of state government is helping municipalities look out onto the broad horizon. Yes, dedicate the funds, but only in a way that ensures we're making the necessary repairs and the long-term investment. The thruway today is at 40% state of good repair. It was 90% state of good repair when this governor took office. They don't know how to invest in infrastructure nor keep infrastructure upgraded.
Mr. Hawkins.
I generally want more flexibility than dedicating money. I've seen households and businesses go bankrupt because, I take this money that just came in and that'll be for the utilities and this will be for the phone and that'll be for my workers. And it's not a budget. You need a budget with flexibility, and every year you got to look at what you got and what you need. Infrastructure needs more investment. It should be a priority. But to just dedicate a certain stream, maybe you don't need it for that infrastructure. You need it for something else. So I'm more for having a budget. I would bring the legislature in much earlier in the budget planning. And so they don't get handed something at the end, and they don't even know what's in it. They just got to vote for it because it's right before the deadline. And that should be a better way to plan and budget.
Thank you, Mr. Hawkins. Ms. Miner.
So as I have said all along during this campaign, I would eliminate the wasteful and ineffective economic development programs and bureaucracy and take that money and invest it in infrastructure. And work with local communities to say, how can we all gather together to see what you need to do? Businesses in Rensselaer County and families in Rensselaer County are worried about PFOAs in their water. They need clean water. People in Rochester and up throughout older cities upstate are worried about lead in their paint, in their old housing, in their water mains. We can work together in order to do that. And I started working on this as the mayor of a very old city where it gets very cold and our infrastructure broke down. We have made light years of progress in using data and technology in an effective way to make the kind of investments that then people can build businesses and families and lives on.
Thank you, Ms. Miner. Mr. Sharp.
What you've noticed is you have a state that's been run by basically Democratic Party for at least the last 8 years, and you've noticed nothing but failure. You've watched Republicans watch this for at least 8 years and have no actual plans. We asked if we're supposed to have some new plans and ideas. I didn't hear any of it. What I heard was, we're going to deal with waste and we're going to deal with efficiencies. What that means is, we're going to do nothing. How many times have you ever seen waste, fraud, and abuse actually work? Yeah, never. It doesn't work ever. Here's the real thing. We want to change things. Let's have new ideas. We have an issue with pipes. We have an issue with bridges or roads. Why aren't we using other companies to come in and fix them for us? We have I-80. Why aren't we instead putting a Google road right next to I-80? Google has the road. They put whatever they want on it. Their maintenance fees are keeping up I-80. I-80 now is fixed. They have another road. We have more options. We have piping. Pepsi brings in tons of water all the time, right, for a marketing piece. Why doesn't Pepsi help us fix it? And you know what? I'll go there, and I'll wave my hand and go, look how awesome Pepsi is. And they'll get the branding they want, and guess what? More money, it's fixed. We don't pay, no investing.
We're going to move on to social policy issues, and Giuseppe's going to do the first question to Mr. Hawkins.
The Me Too movement has uncovered systemic workplace sexual harassment throughout various industries, yet Albany has been relatively unscathed by it. Why hasn't Albany had its moment of reckoning, and what can be done to ensure that there are protections to combat workplace sexual harassment?
Well, the first thing is the law that was passed earlier this year needs to include the legislators. They tend to exempt themselves from laws. They need to broaden the definition of what harassment is because it may not take account of people who are of non-binary status. So those are two changes immediately. We need independent ethics oversight. Jay Cope is appointed by the legislators. That's putting the fox in charge of the chicken house. And so we need an independent ethics oversight in the state. And I think we need to reopen the Moreland Commission on Public Corruption and look at sexual harassment and all the other things that have been going on.
Thank you. Ms. Miner?
Well, I would just say, Josefa, that Albany hasn't been unscathed. Behind Vito Lopez, Eric Schneiderman, Michael Boxley, legislators using taxpayer monies to pay off settlements, it's been very scathed. But what we have seen is a system that is so closed that it has not allowed hearings to happen, the culture to be examined, to have sunlight in there. Nobody has been held accountable for the terrible state of affairs that has existed in the Albany state legislature culture. And you have the current governor who has come right up to his office with the Department of Corrections, settlements happening, people losing jobs and being demoted because of complaining about it. There needs to be hearings. The ultimate disinfectant is sunlight, and that's why I have stood up and said we need to stand with these victims and have hearings and expose the culture so we can change the culture once and for all.
Thank you. Mr. Sharp?
I think she's right. I want to piggyback off of that. The advantage of the Me Too movement, as horrible as it has been, is that it does shine a light on this issue, and I do want us to shine a light on the issue. We can't just punish. The goal has to be to stop the behavior. If you want to stop the behavior, you have to shine a light on it. So I think that's an important piece. We have to make sure that we do have due process, as always. Everyone is, of course, innocent until proven guilty, of course. But there has to be an accountability. So I think I love the ideas we brought up. I think we should be shining a light on them. We can't just focus on punishing. Because if we focus on punishing, people go to jail, and the behavior continues. We also can't stop accountability. It's just because His Majesty King Andrew II always says things like, nothing's been proven. Look, Donald Trump knew what was going on in 2013. What did Cuomo know? What did he know? He didn't know? Of course he did, and he's done nothing. Just because it hasn't been proven, that culture is his culture. He's the one who's made this happen.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp. Mr. Molinaro.
I was asked once if I would have my daughter intern in the New York State Legislature, and my answer was firmly and remains absolutely not. Albany is a cesspool of bad behavior, and powerful men have allowed it to continue without anyone holding anyone accountable. So Albany needs not only an ethics code, that ethics code needs to include a sexual harassment policy. And yes, there needs to be hearings that include testimony from victims, but more than hearings, we need to ensure the law is enforced. And yes, we ought to punish any man who thinks it's okay to take advantage of a woman. And this governor has allowed in the Department of Criminal Justice Services women who came forward to speak up with courage. He has allowed them to be dismissed or to work in a hall closet. It is disgusting. It is disgraceful. And at the end of the day, they need to be swept clean so that kids like my daughter could safely intern in the state capitol, where we should be celebrating the best behavior, not the ugliest.
Thank you, Mr. Molinaro. The next question will be asked by Takora, directed to Ms. Miner.
What legislation would your administration support or introduce to protect LGBT people from work and housing discrimination? And do you support trans-inclusive health care?
So as the mayor of Syracuse, I can tell you I'm very proud of the fact that we passed gender, supported gender long before gay marriage was supported and voted on in Albany. We supported it and had annual rallies talking about it. We did a lot of progress in the city of Syracuse over these particular issues, and I would continue to do that, to have a more open and inclusive government and make sure that we don't have anybody who gets discriminated on based on the characteristics. And in terms of transgender healthcare issues, I would certainly be open to it. We'd have to look at the specifics of what exactly that means.
Thank you, Ms. Miner. Mr. Sharp.
Of course, I hate the idea of protected classes because that often makes people a second-class citizen forever. But I recognize that we have a problem and we have to fix it. So, of course, trans people are as good or as bad or the same as everybody else. Of course, I would support them in every way, shape, and form. In fact, I have trans people on my actual campaign. Of course I do. The thing to remember, though, here is if we decide that law is the only answer, we're going to have a situation to where if you look right now at a law firm in New York City, they'll say, we have a lot of people who are different in some way, shape, or form. The non-white person, who do they have? They're all in a mailroom. That's what law alone does. Law alone's not enough. We have to change the culture so that there's no need for these laws. I accept them now, we need them. We have to change our culture. We don't need them anymore, because what happens is we start checking boxes. And we have, oh, he or she fits the boxes where you stay, and no one else grows. This is a culture change.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp. Mr. Molinaro, no clapping, please. Mr. Molinaro.
The short answer to your question is yes. Every individual, regardless how they identify or express or whom they love, deserves the protection of the Constitution and the laws of the state of New York. And as governor, it'd be my responsibility to ensure that. If for any reason the federal government were to scale back its protections, I would want to move in with the state legislature to ensure that the state of New York endeavors to protect those rights. And yes, to almost the entire extent, health insurance is health insurance. It should cover people for the ailment and or the challenges they have. What I've done as a county executive is to reestablish our county's Human Rights Commission, and as governor of the state of New York, I'd like to use that platform to have the serious conversations we need to have about social issues, about who we are as a people and how we hope to live, and actually lead the conversation to overcome perhaps those biases and prejudices that still exist. Use that forum, that mechanism, and use the bully pulpit of governor to have serious conversations, not just to show up and hand out money, but to engage in conversation.
Mr. Hawkins.
Yes, it's long past time that the state legislature and the governor sign the Gender Equality Non-Discrimination Act. In terms of health care, I'm for the New York Health Act to provide all medically necessary services to all New Yorkers at less cost than we're paying now. And all medically necessary services means the unique needs of transgender people. And I agree that we need to change the culture, and it starts with the governor. He has a platform, or she has a platform, and they got to use that to basically make it acceptable to people who now resist the idea of transgender people having equality. That's a problem that's cultural that needs gubernatorial leadership to try to change the culture.
Thank you. We have a couple of follow-up questions. Ken?
For Mr. Molinaro, you talked about how you would fight to include everyone transgender. Do you support gender, the bill?
I haven't read the newest version. I did not support it when I was in the state legislature because there were there are certain policies like women and minority-owned business status that I think just to need to be made perfectly clear. We need to define gender expression and gender identity and whether or not the state government treats those two things as equivalents. But I'm willing to negotiate with the state legislature the appropriate policy to ensure that there's adequate protection. And that those who
excuse
me,
yeah. Susan, I think you had a.
I did. Same question for Larry Sharp. Would you sign the gender bill if it came across your desk if you were governor?
As I said, I want to change the culture. That's important to me.
So is that yes or no, though?
Hold on. And at 30 seconds. At 30 seconds, I can still say yes or no in 30 seconds. And yes, I would. The issue is, I still have to go further. It's not enough. I don't want that law to need to exist, so I have to go further. I don't want permanent second-class citizens.
Thank you. We're going to move on to gun issues, and Susan, you're going to have the first question to Mr. Sharp.
On guns, under red flag laws in places in other states, family members would bring individuals that they think are mentally unfit to the attention of law enforcement, and then after due process, a judge would either temporarily or permanently take their weapons away. Do you support any version of a so-called red flag law?
Yeah, there is no requirement at all for a red flag law, and the reason why I say it is, you're saying red flag laws now, what they actually do is they force the teachers and or medical personnel to become part of a secret state police where they are required to report on people. When that happens, you have people like veterans particularly who go, I don't want to go get help because I'm going to lose my firearms. You have people who have car accidents and all of a sudden they walk into a room and someone says, how do you feel? They go, oh, I feel so terrible, I want to kill myself. Boom, suicidal, they lose their firearms. You don't have to have a law to tell the cops you think someone in your family is going to hurt themselves or is crazy or whatever you think your family member is. Just tell them. We should encourage that. But once we have a law, we are creating a secret state police. It is hurting my veterans. I have veterans now who will go to their friends and say, here, take my firearms because I don't want to tell anybody else. And what they're saying to the other veteran is, I just put that firearm in my mouth last night and I didn't pull the trigger. That's what we're creating now. No, there's no need for a red flag law.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp.
Use the bully pulpit. If you have a problem, tell your family and friends.
No clapping, please.
Yes.
If it continues, we'll escort you out of the building.
You all got to go.
Mr. Molinaro,
you
have
1 minute.
Actually, current state law doesn't permit that. And in fact, if you were to pursue the removal of a firearm in family court, it's done currently without due process, which is a problem. Our focus needs to be, in my estimation, on the underpinnings of violence. Why are we allowing people to live in traumatic situations with severe mental illness and not getting the help they deserve? Certainly families should be empowered to come forward if they feel that their lives or their family members' lives are threatened. But where we fail as a society, and we ought to be ashamed, quite frankly, is the dismantling of mental health services in the state of New York, where we allow individuals, especially, by the way, young boys, to live with severe trauma without the help they need. So we need to make sure they're mental health professionals, that teachers are taught in trauma-informed care, that law enforcement has mental health first aid, so that no one needs to make a phone call, but rather we identify very effectively those who struggle the most and ensure that they're getting the help they deserve, not leaving them onto the streets or sending them off to jail or having them live in shelters across the state of New York. This is a crisis. Mental health issues are a crisis in the state of New York.
Yes or no? You hit me
Mr.
with the yes.
Mr. Hawkins.
You didn't say yes or no.
Mr. Sharma.
You don't get to be the candidate and the panelist. Sorry.
Mr. Hawkins, you have 1 minute.
Yeah, we have a real serious problem with gun violence in this country. It's bigger than any other country in the world except those at war. So we've got to think seriously about this problem. The highest correlation with gun violence is social inequality. That explains street crime, like we had a spate of it here in Syracuse, or up in Syracuse where I live at. Veterans. There are more veterans dying from suicide than dying in the Middle East from the wars they've gone to. So we've got to address that issue. We have people losing their livelihood, taxi drivers, dairy farmers, factory workers, and they feel so bad about it, they take their lives. We've got to deal with that. Now, we also need to have reasonable gun regulations. I believe within the framework of the Heller decision, you can have your pistols, your rifles, your shotguns, but there's a right to regulate for public safety. As far as the red flag law goes, if you put it in there, it's got to have real due process. And I agree with Larry Sharp that we should encourage doctors and teachers when they see something
you,
or fellow
Hawkins.
Veterans
say
something to the authorities.
Ms. Miner?
Thank you, yes.
Look, I support a red flag law as long as the due process element is first and foremost. Where we see, I think, fundamentally our lack of civil dialogue in our community breaking down is around violence and gun violence in particular. And if we say to a whole segment of society that are hunters and believe in Second Amendment rights, you're not valued, you don't aren't part of this discussion, we will continue to see more of a breakdown in being able to solve problems like this. We need to bring everybody around the table respectfully and say, how do we keep weapons out of the hands of people who are mentally unstable, who are suicidal, who are unhappy, or who are just plain violent? And yet what we have today is a community that exists through hyperpartisanship in one camp or the other and won't talk to each other about this. And that's what we have to prevent from happening if we are truly going to eliminate the kind of fundamental violence that unfortunately we are seeing happen on our streets of cities like Syracuse, places like synagogues in Pennsylvania and Pittsburgh. We have to talk to each other.
Thank you, Ms. Miner. The next question is from Ken and will be directed to Mr. Molinaro first.
So one part of the SAFE Act gun control law that was passed in the wake of Sandy Hook that was not enacted so far has been the ammunition database. The state Senate helped block it and the state police has never readied it. If elected, would you push for the state police to finalize such a database and push the legislature or the Senate in particular to give the go-ahead?
No, and I'll use the rest of my time to talk about the fact that in inner cities across the state of New York, with respect, Rochester, Syracuse, Albany, and Buffalo, we see continued, because of generational poverty, because of access to education that's failing them, and because of the lack of jobs and nutritional and health opportunities, we see people choosing violence as the way in which to express themselves. And the governor has allowed this to happen without really engaging with municipalities. I've said this publicly before, so I'll use the rest of my time to commit to it. I would declare a state of emergency, assemble the mayors and upstate counties, and use the resources of state government, private sector partners, and others to engage in the heavy lifting of helping people out of generational poverty, ensuring that there are job opportunities, making sure that there are drug addiction and mental health services that, by the way, aren't there, and working with mayors across the upstate New York every month to establish outcomes, benchmarks, and approve that we have an action plan to succeed, because it is a lack of hope that has people turning to drugs and
Thank
to
you,
violence.
Mr. Molinaro. Mr. Hawkins.
It would not be a priority to enforce that ammunition database. The sheriffs don't want to enforce it like some other laws. I think we got to go after the root causes of gun violence, which is poverty. We got to have economic security and more equality. And we got to stop sending our young men and women off to fight wars that have nothing to do with defending us, but protecting oil and other assets that multinational corporations want protected around the world. And one of the things we need to do in our cities is get the lead out. 40% of the children in Syracuse, 40% in Buffalo. I think over here in Arbor Hill, it's in the 30%. are lead poison that affects their neurological development, their motor skills, their intellectual capacities, and their behaviors. They have short tempers. That tends to be a permanent disability. And if that's something we got to address, and it's criminal that the two major parties, 47 years after the Surgeon General warned us, has not solved that problem, which is not rocket science. It's a priority that needs to be addressed.
Thank you, Mr. Hawkins. Ms. Miner.
I don't think that the ammunition database is a priority, and I think the way that the SAFE Act was not discussed, not debated, and went in and made law under cover of night in the long term did a huge disservice, particularly on how we solve issues like this, because we need people to talk to one another about this. In December of last year in Madison County, there was a gun store owner who noticed that a young person trying to buy a gun was asking a lot of strange questions. He alerted the sheriffs about it, the sheriffs went and interceded, and this young man was planning on doing a mass shooting and a mass suicide. Because he had respect for the process, because he had respect for his community, he did the right thing and violence was stopped. We need to look at this as a complicated problem that needs all of us to get together and talk about it from a mental health perspective and access to weapons, poverty, and not just a criminal justice issue alone.
Thank you, Ms. Miner. Mr. Sharp.
I get two SAFE Act questions in a row. I get why you guys dodged it. I don't get why you dodged both of them twice.
I answered the question, sir.
Let me be very clear. SAFE Act's a bad idea. It is a bad idea because it made millions of New Yorkers criminals overnight. Not just that. That ammunition database made a black market in ammunition sales. It made a black market in firearm sales. It did nothing but make law enforcement harder. It's a terrible idea. It affects our veterans more than it affects our non-veterans on top of it, and it makes people afraid. People are leaving our state because of this. It was so broken that it made our cops criminals overnight. On top of it, they had to fix it. This is an embarrassment. It has to go. As governor, I will make sure that by 2020, the SAFE Act will be repealed. It made no one safer. It makes no one safer. What everyone talked about making other things better, yes, let's do that instead. And stop wasting our time on the SAFE Act.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp. Yeah. The next question will be asked by Susan. It deals with local government issues, and it will be directed to Mr. Hawkins.
So you mentioned a lot of problems that local communities have, like a lack of mental health services and lead paint. Do you have any plans to address local government's over-reliance on the property tax? And are you supportive of efforts to allow municipalities to more easily diversify their revenue streams? And if the answer is yes, what revenue options would you consider?
Yeah, I believe local government ought to have more home rule on its taxation. We need a new relationship between the state government and local government. The first thing is the state should pay for its programs, not shift it to the local property tax, and have us balance the state budget with our property taxes, which are the highest in the nation in upstate New York. So that's number one. Number two, we used to have real revenue sharing in this state. It was 8% of state revenues. Today it's 0.4%, and the governor has had it frozen since he got into office. We need to restore revenue sharing and not have a tax cap of 2%, arbitrary, one-size-fits-all, cookie-cutter. Let local communities decide their priorities, how much they want to cut property taxes, how much they want to put into mental health services, how much they want to put into cleaning up the lead, and let local communities. And then on diversifying local revenue streams, local government should have the same right as Yonkers and New York City to have an income tax, which can be more progressive than the property and sales taxes.
Thank you, Mr. Hawkins. Ms. Miner.
Well, Susan, as you well know, this is something I spent 8 years and a lot of sleepless nights thinking about, trying to be creative about. The reason New York State's property taxes are higher than any other state is because of the way New York State funds Medicaid. So I have proposed that all non-New York City counties, that we have a systemized takeover of the local share of Medicaid, and then we take the county and we say the amount of money that we've taken over, you're gonna recip the savings and property taxes back to the property tax owners. That will give us some equality and help bring some equity into the system. In terms of revenue, we have to understand that particularly upstate, looking at a model that had high manufacturers paying high property tax costs on lots of land, that model is long gone, and we need to look at different models. And one of the models we need to look at is most of our upstate cities have a disproportionate number of nonprofits, like the one we're in right now, which is beautiful and gorgeous and serves an important public role, but pays no money towards police, fire, snow removal, which is very important in
Thank
upstate
you, Ms.
New York.
Miner.
I'm going to take my extra 30 seconds for this one. I'm a mayor, former mayor after all. So we need to look at how these entities like this and hospitals and government, 76% of the tax roll in the city of Albany is off the taxes, off property taxes. 51% in the city of Syracuse. It's like that across the board, and yet they're getting our most expensive services. So as mayor, what I did is entered and negotiated the first of its kind in the state in a shared services agreement with Syracuse University and Krauss Hospital and said, if you are utilizing our most expensive services, then you should be paying for those services and delivering equity through that, because that makes sense.
Thank you, Ms. Miner. Mr. Sharp.
Now, this is about property tax, right? Now, we have people who have been in charge, mayor and executive, and is property tax only bad this year? No, for decades, right? So why aren't these plans already into effect? It's very simple what we can do. There's a problem with property tax is you don't vote on it. Your legislators do. So unfunded mandates come in, as Howie said, the unfunded mandates come in. A county is now strapped with paying 80-90% of its budget on something that Albany or DC says so. Now they have no way of making money. The legislators go in the back room, declare an emergency or a crisis, and then raise your property tax 9%. But what if instead the law changed and you simply had you on November on the ballot, would you like your property tax raised 9%? You'd all say no. That would stop property tax being raised. That simple. It's a simple plan. We can stop it right there. The most important thing, though, is, as you said, fixing Medicaid and also fixing our schooling. I don't want to just cut taxes. That shifts the burden. I want to lower spending. We do that, we win.
Thank you. Mr. Molinaro.
Yeah, Albany and local governments need to be accountable and responsible. And our plan, which I've been fighting for the last 3 years through the New York State Association of Counties, is the full take back of Medicaid, both in and out of the city, 10 and 15 year take back. And with that, require municipalities to lower their property taxes. Our plan would produce a 28% reduction in property taxes over 5 years. But at the same time, to the other comments, absolutely we need to drive down costs. You can't collar revenue without actually cutting expenditures. And I'm going to take my 30 seconds too, so just add to that if you don't mind. So there's a necessity to collaborate among municipalities in the delivery of services. And with all due respect, there isn't a single village, town, or county in the state of New York that could afford to transfer all of its expenditures to an income tax or to one other stream of revenue, because they don't have the economy to pay for it. So we have to use the resources of state government and be a partner. Bring municipalities together to drive down costs, to share in the delivery of infrastructure, snow plowing, repairing streets and sidewalks. Use that, the power of scaling up and leveraging economies of scale, which, by the way, we have done in my county. Dutchess County has been a leader in shared services for the last decade. We do the things that municipalities can't afford to do on their own, and by doing that, yes, sir, for the last 4 years, Dutchess County has cut the property tax levy, and we will continue through policies at the state level to drive down costs, to identify efficiencies, and share in the delivery of service. And with every one of those steps, we must statutorily require property taxes to go down and then make permanent the property tax cap. 2% every year forever is not tax relief.
Thank you, Mr. Molinaro. We're going to move on to education issues, and the first question is going to be from Josepha to Ms. Miner.
The governor's free college tuition program has significant barriers, especially for community college students and parents that juggle jobs and school. How would you improve upon the program?
Well, look, I think Andrew Cuomo's free college tuition program is emblematic of his approach to government. It was great optics, it was a great press release and a great event, but when you look at who's able to take advantage of it, just a bare number of people are able to do that. And then when you start looking at the restrictions that you put on people that they want to take advantage to it, even fewer people find that attractive. In the city of Syracuse, starting as a city councilor, I urged the city and worked to partner with the private foundation Say Yes to Education. And we spent close to 12 years implementing a program that gave graduates of public high schools free college tuition. That was the sexy part of it. The important part of it was all the supports and wraparound services that we put around students and their families to help them relieve the pernicious impacts of poverty. And because of that, we've had thousands of students who have gone to college tuition free. The overwhelming majority of them have been the first in their families to go to college. You do this when you have a seriousness of purpose and you care more about the policy and the outcome than you do about the optics.
Thank you, Ms. Miner. Mr. Sharp.
That system is a disaster and an embarrassment and should go away right away. What we're doing is we're saying, let's give free college out. College is not the answer. We think because we give it free, it makes it better. It's not the answer. We have a bunch of 24-year-olds, because it takes an average of 6 years to graduate college, who actually have degrees that have no value. They still can't find jobs, and they're leaving the state. How we said it, 100,000 every year. They're leaving the state left and right. That's a win. So now we're making crappy college better. We're making it freer. Great. So now your degree, if you went to SUNY, now is worth even less. That's your value. It's worth less. And here's the worst part. Kids are now choosing to go to college because it's free, not because it's good for them. And they're picking SUNY schools because they're free, not because it's good for them. So now they're wasting even more time. Now we have more kids who are 24 years old, never had a job, and we wonder why they have no work ethic. This is not the answer. The answer is better for our kids, not worse.
Thank you. Mr. Molinaro?
By most definitions, SUNY and New York State's community college system is among the best in the country, but it is too expensive. It is too expensive, and no, we're not. The governor was, as the mayor offered, high on optics and low on return. And what we ought to be doing is saying to SUNY, strip the bureaucracy, strip the overregulation, strip the high cost, and drive down tuition. So I will demand the SUNY institutions begin the process of significant reductions in tuition so that more people can afford to attend. Here's another idea. As we shovel out taxpayer dollars to private institutions, they too should commit to tuition reduction. Otherwise, no more state aid, no more taxpayer subsidy. Why should it be that taxpayers continue to add more and more to private institutions without them committing to tuition reductions? But I will also use my time to suggest to you that we have a separate and unequal education system that leaves those with developmental disabilities looking on the outside. And the governor's plan makes it nearly impossible for somebody with a disability to access SUNY and secondary education, and that needs to change.
Thank you. Mr. Hawkins.
Yeah, the Excelsior Scholarship is typical of the governor. He talks to the left and governs to the right. He brings out Bernie Sanders, does a big announcement, and then you find out only 3% of the SUNY students and 2% of the CUNY students can afford to use it because most of us are working class. We can't go to school full time. We got to pay the rent. We don't qualify for this scholarship. So let's stop playing around. James Skoufis and Assemblyman had a proposal. He said it'd be about 1% of the state budget. That's $1.5 to $2 billion a year. That would be a good investment. Yeah, we can cut costs in the SUNY system. I think there's too many administrators, not enough teachers, not enough of them on tenure track. We just had a big scandal with SUNY Upstate Medical where the president was taking money on the side and they gave this property to Core Development, which got caught up in another scandal. No money down, no bid. And it tore down 409 units of affordable housing. So tuition free, we did it in CUNY from 1848 to 1876. We're a richer society now. And education, I'll use my 30 seconds, is not just about getting a job. It's about being a free person, knowing what's going on, critically thinking, being able to think about the nonsense you're thrown at you by politicians and the media organizations we got these days. So I think going to college is good in and of itself, whether it qualifies you for a job or not. So I think every person and at any age should be able to go to college. Now that I'm retired as a Teamster and I got to do some work during peak season if I'm not governor, but I want to go back to college at the community college and get back up on my statistics.
Thank you, Mr. Hawkins. The next question will be asked by Susan and it will be directed to Mr. Sharp first.
So this is a more K through 12 question. What does educational equity mean to you? And if you believe that the state has fallen short, can you provide some specific examples as to where?
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, there is no doubt. Right now we have a system to where if you can afford tutors, your kids will do well. And if you can't afford tutors, your kids will struggle. So it doesn't work at all. The entire system has to be revamped from bottom to top. We need to end standardized testing for all kids prior to high school. It has to go away. It is an unfair way of grading teachers. It is an unfair way of judging schools. And it's no indication of success. And it makes kids who are 8, 10, 12 years old feel stupid because they can't take a test well. It creates a second class of student already. And I'm adding 30 seconds. And not just that. K through 12 itself is anachronism. It should not exist anymore. We should be K through 10. The last 2 years for too many kids, and you know this to be true, it is study hall. It is gym, it is smoking weed and video games, wasting time. How do I know that? The first year of college is 13th grade. It's all remedial because no kids are ready for it. Taking over 6 years to graduate college. Stop that, it's a disaster. There are many ways to have success. After you're done at 10th grade, the first thing you do is you have an option. You either, you wanna go to college? Great, go to a 2-year prep school. You wanna do that? Great, Go to a two-year trade school. We need trades in this state. The average tradesman in New York State is over 50 years old. How many kids do you know struggle through college, then 28 years old go, just wanted to build houses? We stole 10 years of that kid's life for no reason or a lie. Instead, let's let our kids be who they want to be when they want to be it. We can do that. How do we pay for it? Very simple. I'm a Marine. When I got in the Marine Corps, I had a GI Bill. I had X dollars and X years to use it. We're going to give our kids.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp.
I thought I had another 30 seconds, didn't I?
You did.
Well, then I want 30 more. Then I'm not done. This is my baby. This is my baby. I'm not done. No. I'm not done.
Nope.
It's my baby.
Please.
Not just that. So we're going to instead give our kids, we're going to give them $20,000 and 7 years to use it. What does that mean? A bunch of trade schools pop up, a bunch of prep schools pop up. How do I know? It's guaranteed government money. Banks love that. They always give loans for that. We're good. When that begins to happen, we'll spend only $10,000 per kid, not 22. We'll save $12,000 per kid. There's about 400,000 11th and 12th graders in New York State. That's more than $4 billion, more than what we'll lose from federal funds. We'll make that up and require less administrators and better teachers, happier kids, happier parents.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp. Mr. Molinaro.
We have to begin to localize decision-making so school districts have the authority and the ability to connect educational outcomes with economic needs. You have to end corporate Common Core, which is devaluing the desire of teachers to teach and inspiring students to learn. We must reintroduce vocational technical training in a K-12 experience. We ought to ensure that private sector partners can work beyond PTEC, which we do in the state of New York, but actually partner like they do in other states and other countries in the world so that we're helping kids identify and create a pipeline from kindergarten to employment. And yes, we have to reevaluate the way in which we fund education and distribute those dollars. Because right now, the formula is political, it is not based on outcomes, it is not based on needs, and we have no metric to identify success. Which is why we have to ensure that we localize decision making and make sure the dollars follow those districts that need help, and that we are able to measure success and achieve that. We also need to end the separate and unequal form of education, special ed versus general ed, and that is a violation
Thank
of New Yorker
you,
civil
Molinaro.
Rights.
Mr. Hawkins.
We need three things for educational equity. Full funding, like was promised, equitable funding, an end to high-stakes testing right up to the region's test,
yes,
and desegregating the most segregated schools in the nation that are most segregated by race and class. Full funding means not having your attorney general fight Syracuse, New York in one suit and seven small cities in another for the funding that was promised originally coming out of the campaign for fiscal equity case. Ending high stakes testing. You can do portfolios. You can have people pass, the required number of classes. That's how I got a high school degree
Absolutely.
In California. And desegregation between schools, we got a big problem, but also within schools because we have a tracking system. And you end up in New York City, 40% of the schools don't have physics. And they start getting tracked in kindergarten where the rich folks have the 3- and 4-year-olds test prepping for that test in kindergarten that starts them off where they're going to end up in that segregated school that doesn't have any science. Yeah. That's got to stop.
Thank you, Mr. Hawkins.
It's not even being discussed.
Ms. Miner?
8 years ago, I remember Andrew Cuomo sitting on a debate podium talking about how we in New York State have two systems of education, one for the rich and one for the poor.
Yep.
And I applauded him for that. 8 years later, we still have the same thing, one for the rich and one for the poor. I fought very hard for the campaign for fiscal equity. We need to redo the way we do foundational aid, and we have to redo our Byzantine school aid formula that somehow after the fact comes up with things like bullet aid for politically powerful and connected legislators rather than looking at the outcomes of students. I know something about this. I had the highest graduation rates in my school district in 10 years in the city of Syracuse, of which I'm very proud of, and the school district and the teachers and the administrators and the families, and we all work together. What we need is flexibility and accountability for standards and focus on the outcome and the children, not on the political powers and rewarding money behind that.
Thank you, Ms. Miner. The next question will be asked by Ken, and it will be directed to Mr. Molinaro first.
Thank you.
So Governor Cuomo and the Senate Republicans have been big backers of charter schools, which have proven less popular with many, but not all, but many Democrats in the Assembly and Senate. Do you support an expansion of charter schools throughout New York, or do you agree with critics that they drain needed resources from traditional public schools?
Well, the easy answer is yes to both. I mean, the fact of the matter is that, yes, I support school choice, and in particular in areas where this state has abandoned the most challenged of districts. I also believe that we shouldn't be diminishing our commitment to public education. So that's the answer to the question, Ken. And what I would offer as well, and I really passionately believe this, where we are failing is not just rich versus poor, and I agree, but general ed versus special ed. And I offer this only because there's an entire population of New Yorkers living with developmental disabilities that don't have the support that they deserve. And this governor and this state has allowed these two separate unequal forms of education, which in my estimation is a violation of civil rights. Beyond that, the federal government is supposed to be making a commitment to special ed and hasn't. And if necessary, I will litigate the matter because it is that important to ensure that we combat the prejudice that is allowing those who live with special needs and developmental disabilities to not have the independence and support that they deserve. There's a whole generation
Thank
of kids
you,
that need our help.
Ken has a follow-up for you.
I'm very grateful.
How do you support expanded charter schools while at the same time saying you shouldn't diminish aid to traditional schools?
Because,
how would you do that?
Well, because instead of directing dollars, and I agree again with Mayor Minor, instead of directing dollars based on political needs, you direct dollars based on outcomes and needs. And so the entire funding formula for education needs to be focused on establishing outcomes and moving dollars to the areas that need it the most. Instead, all we do is take what we did last year, add some new formula at 2%, and make a political decision. That's inexcusable. And so there are kids being left out and left behind. So absolutely, commit to public education. Absolutely, allow for choice where it's appropriate
Thank
and necessary.
Thank you, Mr. Molinaro. Mr. Hawkins?
Yeah, I oppose any more charter schools. These are private schools. They're no more public than Lockheed Martin is public. Just because they get public money in a contract doesn't mean they're publicly controlled. They've won court cases where we can't look at their books. These are private corporations. I even wonder if it's constitutional in New York State where public money is not supposed to support private education. And this is about business more than it is about education. That's why the hedge funds are putting all this money. Governor Cuomo just got a whole bunch more for promoting charter schools. Juan Gonzalez had a well-known article in the Daily News about 2010 about how up here in Albany, the investors were doubling their money because you get 39% write-off all the money you put into the charter school every year. And I looked that up and I found before I got the Juan Gonzalez article earlier in the year, I got to Investopedia telling you how to do it. This is about business, not education. All charters have been increasing segregation, and they can push out the special needs students, the kids with behavioral problems, and the low testers. They're not part of the public educational system. Private schools
Thank
can fund themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Hawkins. Ms. Minor.
You know, in the city of Syracuse, we have charter schools, we have parochial schools, and we have public schools. And I think the worst thing that you can do is to pin them against each other and antagonize them. The truth of the matter is we want to give people and families the choices that are best for their children. And charter schools are best for some children, and parochial schools are best for others, and we need a vibrant public school system. But we should not allow a state government or a local government or a mayor to say that if you support one, you don't support the other. The reality is we have to dramatically increase the standards that we have for people who are graduating, children who are graduating in New York State. And charter schools is a tool that should be used to do that, just as a healthy public schools is, just as parochial schools are as well.
Thank you, Ms. Minor. The next question
about
vote.
I don't get to answer. Are you mad at me? Did I do something wrong?
Oh, sorry.
Did I break a rule?
See,
you guys clap too much. They're punishing
I
me now.
I apologize, Mr. Sharp.
Oh, no worries, no worries. Yes. Look, we talked about local, but then people didn't say local. How about we instead change how we fund this completely? Why don't we instead just write a check to each district and say good luck, and we don't even have any local school tax? How about instead we just allow the local districts to do what they want, but have transparency? And when they find the right answers, we begin to copy them. And when they fail, then we help them out. And when they don't fail, we can watch and make sure everyone does better. I'm the guy who says let teachers teach, then I let them actually teach. I don't decide to put more rules on them. I allow them to do what's great. I assume I don't know better. I assume Albany doesn't know better. But I thought, and maybe I'm off here, isn't part of your tax plan allowing schools to just be kind of shut down as part of how you save tax money? Did I read that wrong?
Yes.
Okay, I read that wrong. I thought his program was similar to closing down some
I'll
of the bases.
I'll send you the link.
Yes, I need that link. Because from what I understand, you're actually shutting down schools randomly
not.
Without people actually locally even knowing.
No.
I actually want local control. I don't want to create a board, which actually what you do, you create a board and the board
Thank
decides
you,
that a school gets shut down.
Thank
I don't
you.
Want that. That local control, we can grow.
The question will be asked by Tacora, and it has to do with voting, and it will be directed to Mr. Hawkins first.
Younger voters have traditionally been unreliable voters. What will you do to ensure that young people become engaged in the political process and vote?
We need to build movements that get people engaged on the issues that concern them. Issues concerning young people right now are college debt. Am I going to get a job when I get out of college that I can afford to pay the debt? And a whole lot of other issues. And the way young people have got engaged in making change, and that's why you want to vote. You want to vote for the kind of public policies you want, is that they're engaged politically, not just when election comes around and you mobilize them. And that's on civic organizations, it's on political parties, and I think all of us, civic organizations, political parties, are not doing a good job of that because we don't listen to the young people. I was a young person involved in movements, and I'm telling you, when we said don't trust anybody over 30, it makes a lot of sense looking back. Not that you shouldn't trust anybody over 30, but man, some of those old heads were way off, and we were right. So we got to respect the young people in these movements and reach out to them, talk to them, build relationships, and
Thank
then
you,
let
Mr.
them
Hawkins.
Lead on the issues
Thank
they're
you.
Concerned
Ms.
about.
Ms. Minor?
You know, Decor, it is incredibly hard to vote in New York State. You want to know why? One of the biggest reasons is because when you tie your voting to where you live, what happens with young people? They're moving every 9 months. So every 9 months, they're going to go and update and check that? We only allow voting one day a year, and if you want an absentee, you better have a good excuse and know somebody who's going to give you an absentee. We are woefully far behind other states. We should make it easier to vote. We should have early voting. We should have nonpartisan redistricting. And we should tell students that we want to have their opinion and that when they go and vote for Bernie Sanders, we don't say to them, oh, sorry, you didn't register as a Democrat 18 months before this election, therefore you can't vote. The reality is that the system works very well for the people that it rewards. The harder they make it to vote, the fewer people that come out, particularly young people, and the more it rewards those vested interest holders and not the people at large. There are places in Oregon that have vote by mail, they have 80% turnout. Imagine how different our public policy
Thank
would
you,
be
Ms.
if we
Minor.
Had 80% turnout.
Mr. Sharp.
Could you repeat the question, please?
Decora.
What will you do to ensure that young people become engaged in the political process and vote?
Joe Rogan. That's what I'll do, Joe Rogan. I'm the only guy doing podcasts, I'm the only one talking to him. I'm the one who's out there doing all the new and cool things. I'm the only one who fills a room without having a TV commercial because I know where the kids are. They aren't watching the CBS Nightly News. They're not watching CBS 880. They're not listening to that radio station. They're not doing that. I'm going where they are, but there's something else I'm doing. I'm giving them actually new ideas. What you're finding here, who has the newest ideas? This guy here. I'm the one talking about new and different things. I'm the one exciting them. I'm the one bringing them here. I'm the one talking about legalizing hemp and cannabis and supporting the vape industry. I'm the one who's talking about bringing blockchain and Bitcoin back to the state. That's me. Nobody else is doing that. I'm the one doing that. And when they see me do that, they get excited. They want to come back. They want to engage. I'm the one talking to them. I show up at schools. I show up wherever they need me to show up. I'm the one doing that stuff. That's how I know they'll show up. Because in 2016, they didn't see Trump coming. 2018, they don't see me coming, but the result will be the same.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp. Mr. Molinaro.
Everyone here has been making efforts to reach out to young people. I think Mr. Hawkins has led young people down the road of great crusades, as has the mayor, and Mr. Sharp, you have, and with all due respect, so have I. At the end of the day, yes, we need to ease access to voter registration. We need to ease access to make it easier for voters to actually participate in the process. How about one primary date? How about a quicker and easier access to register? But yeah, we ought to be engaging in the real conversations with young people so that they understand that they have the power. I ran for office as an 18-year-old, not because I wanted a title, but because I knew my community wasn't responding to the needs of young people. So it means getting out from behind the podium and engaging in the conversation. Initiative and referendum. Have open town hall meetings. Let the public understand that they have the power. Yes, independent redistricting. Yes, making sure that voters are engaged in the decision making. And yes, make sure that legislators and elected officials don't get to stifle the voices of ordinary New Yorkers. Do all of those things, but be a leader. Go out into the community and
Thank
engage
you,
in the dialogue.
Mr. Molinaro. The next question has to do with environmental issue, and Ken, it will be directed to Ms. Minor.
The communities of Hoosick Falls and Newburgh and others have been impacted by toxins in drinking water, specifically PFOA and PFOs. Citizens have been asking for New York to establish drinking water standards for these chemicals. Governor Cuomo established an advisory committee over a year ago, but it hasn't acted. How would you deal with the issue?
Look, let me first say that the whole way that the state government has interacted with the communities in Rensselaer County over PFOAs has been disgraceful. I happened to be in Albany the day that they were trying to chase down the health department to find out what the standards were, and I saw a state government run away from its constituents who were scared about their health care. I have spent, as I said, Syracuse is an old city and it's cold, and I had a crusade about water mains. And I talked about the importance of delivering safe water at an affordable place in an effective way. And the governor came into Syracuse and said, you fix your own pipes, I'm going to do economic development. He's been a failure at economic development, and he has failed at building infrastructure. And until New Yorkers feel like they have clean, affordable water, then we will not have the great state that it can be. I have made water quality a priority long before anybody talked about it, long before Flint, Michigan, when I was hearing from people in Albany say, you can't cut a ribbon on water mains. That's the kind of mayor that I was. That's what I believe in, and long before it got that, and that's the kind of governor I will be.
Mr. Sharp.
This is a great question, and one of the most important things we have to create at the AG level is some way for the AG to actually prosecute people effectively, and that's the EVU, which is an Environmental Victims Unit. It's a unit that I want to create which actually allows the AG to prosecute people well enough so that when they make a mistake, when they do something wrong, when they break something, that it can actually pierce the corporate veil and punish the individual. We start doing that, you'll see people begin to change on how they act. You'll see less problems, less issues. You'll see people become more afraid of that. But what happens when we have problems now? I'm fine with more standards, I absolutely am. But I also don't want to take the time and the energy to put all the money from us to fix these things. Again, this is a new idea. Why aren't we using these cleanups instead, allowing new companies, new technology, to test their technology, to test their new ideas into fixing these and using it as a branding exercise. They gain a branding exercise, they can actually fix this thing, we can actually watch it, we can see how new things happen. The EPA has old rules that don't work.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp. Mr. Molinaro.
What the state has allowed to happen in Hoosick Falls and Newburgh and other communities is criminal. And the fact that even today we do not have PFOA and PFO standards is criminal. We have a tool that can enforce the law. The departments of health, both at the state level and the local level, need to be told that they have to enforce the law. And yes, we need to direct appropriate dollars to help make sure there's municipal water, but at the same time, the polluters should be held accountable. I've been fighting with environmental groups for the cleanup of the Hudson River. If you pollute the water, you pay for it. And in the same respect, if we're putting dollars on the ground, it ought to go to make sure people have access to clean, drinkable water. In the same respect, there are those living in subsidized housing all across the state of New York where we don't even know whether or not the water is in safe drinking condition. So effective investigation, effective enforcement, effective education, and then hold the polluters accountable. That's the only way to deal with what is, by the way, a crisis below the ground.
Thank you, Mr. Molinaro. Mr. Hawkins?
Yeah, this administration was late to recognize what was going on in Hoosick Falls and do anything about it. And then this Water Council was announced. It was supposed to meet in March. It just met, I think, 2 weeks ago, finally, to start setting these standards. This is ridiculous. Look, I'm the candidate of the Green Party. This is a priority for me, for us. And we're going to make sure the DEC is staffed, and we're going to deal with issues like water, lead, the algae blooms in our lakes, and climate change. That's the one that's really threatening our civilization. We've been calling since 2010, this is my third campaign, 100% clean energy by 2030, because that's what the climate science says we've got to do if we're going to avoid a catastrophe, runaway global warming, and where it gets beyond, we can take it back. And these three campaigns, we first got the ban on fracking. The movement wasn't with us when we were demanding it in 2010. We got it by 2014. And then we got legislation written since then that puts into legislation this demand for 100% clean energy by 2030. And next session, whether I'm governor or not,
Thank
we're going to get
Mr.
that
Hawkins.
Bill passed.
Given the time, we will now move into the closing statements. Each candidate will have 2 minutes for a closing statement, and we'll start with Mr. Sharp.
Here's what I want you to realize. For the past 16 years, the Republicans and Democrats have run this state. Democrats in general. The Republicans have not won a statewide election in 16 years. Not governor, lieutenant governor, AG, controller, nothing. Do you really think they're going to win this time? Stop. That's not going to happen. That's a fantasy. The only person who can possibly win on this stage is the guy you're talking to now. How do you know that? Half this room's here for me. That's how you know that. Thank you. That's how you know that to be true. This is the only person who can win. We've already seen the stats. The stats are right now. If I drop out today, guess who wins? Cuomo does. If they drop out today, guess who wins? Cuomo does. If you drop out today, guess who wins? I do. That's exactly how that works. The Democrats have been failing for the past 16 years. Republicans have been watching for 16 years, and they have no plan. Democrats have no plan. Republicans have no plan. You heard nothing but plans from me. You may not like those plans. You may think they're wrong or they're bad, but I have them. You might think I can change them. Then help me change them. I'm happy. I don't have a career to protect. I don't have a party to help out. What I have is a desire to fix New York. I focus on one important thing, your happiness. I'm a business guy. That's who I am. Happy customers means a powerful, very good company. Happy New Yorkers means you stay here. Imagine if you're happy, you stay here. You grow your business here. You grow your family here. And guess what? You spend your pension here. That's what I want. That's what I'm focused on in every way, shape, or form. You don't like my ideas? No worries. Help me fix them. I need you. I don't have the party. I have you. You stay with me. We can make a real change in this state. We can change New State to make a better New York. We can make a happier New York. If you vote for me, we'll make a new New York. We absolutely will. Remember something. If you vote for me, one of two things will happen. One, I'll win. And when I win, I will change this state overnight. I'll change this nation overnight.
Thank
or two,
you,
I'll come
Sharp.
In second, and we'll still change.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp.
Larry Sharp,
Mr.
for a new New York. Thank you.
Please stop. Mr. Molinaro, you have 2 minutes.
You don't strike me as the happiest guy, but I'm happy that we are all here today, and I'm grateful to the League of Women Voters and all of you for being here, whomever you support. Listen, I have spent every day of my adult life dedicated to making government function for people. I've served my community because I believe, as Bobby Kennedy suggested, that public service is a dignified duty. I began my public service career as a kid because I really wanted to change the way in which my community responded to the needs of people. And every day of my adult life, I've dedicated myself to trying to solve problems without concern for ideology or party politics. We've appointed people of every background, the best and the brightest, to help lead Dutchess County, the village of Tivoli, and work with us in the service that I gave as a state legislator. Today, after 8 years of the status Cuomo, we have the highest tax state in America. We shoulder the highest burden of property taxes of any people in the country. We have the most corrupted state government by any measurement. And we are stealing and defrauding taxpayers. And at the end of the...
Mr. Sharp... Everyone gave you the opportunity to speak.
I'm sorry, yes,
where you're going to afford Mr. Molinaro the same.
Thank you.
And at the end of the day, we need to start again. So I'm running for governor of the state of New York because I know how hard it is to live in the state of New York. I grew up on food stamps with a mother who struggled with mental health and committed every single day to inspiring and encouraging her kids to work hard, which I've done. I've earned my place right here. And today there are two New Yorks. They're the New York of the powerful, the ones in which Andrew Cuomo and those who pay for access get to make the decisions. I'm running for governor because I believe in the power of ordinary New Yorkers and the need to address the needs of ordinary New Yorkers. That means focusing on quality job growth and economic development that affects upstate and all of the state. It means strengthening education and providing services for those with developmental disabilities. It means confronting mental illness and the public health crisis of our lifetime, drug addiction. And it means ensuring that there are greater opportunities, greater freedom, and greater independence for all. It means having a state government that's honest and honorable and dedicates itself to the service of the people. I ask for your support.
Mr. Hawkins.
Well, thank you to the League of Women Voters for performing this public service. You stepped up where the corporate media would not.
Yes.
I really enjoyed this discussion. I wish we had a series of them.
Me too.
Shame on Andrew Cuomo for not coming here.
Yeah. 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 Can throw us out for that one. Yeah.
Please.
Shame on the broadcast and cable corporations and networks for not broadcasting this.
Yes.
And for bowing down to Cuomo.
Please give Mr. Hawkins his 2 minutes to speak.
They're acting like state media for the two-party state, just like Pravda used to act like state media for the old Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. Except it's slicker. They give you the illusion of choice here. They're not giving the people the full story. Look, I've been a construction worker and a Teamster for over 4 decades. I know what we workers have been going through. Workers' wages are stagnant, but the rent, property taxes, health care, daycare, college costs are going through the roof. So I'm calling for a Green New Deal for New York. I'm the only candidate on the progressive left on the ballot. I'm the only candidate for universal single-payer health care, for 100% clean energy by 2030, for the hundreds of thousands of good new jobs in construction and manufacturing, building that clean energy system will provide, for fully funding our public schools, not private charter schools, for a $15 minimum wage upstate, too. We don't have it. For stronger rent regulations under local control. Don't have a state legislature doing your rent regulations. For the state to fully pay for its mandates. And I'm the only candidate on the ballot that says tax the rich who now get one-third of the income in the state. They need to pay more. The question in this election is, what kind of message are we going to send? Are we going to give Cuomo a free ride, or are we going to demand more? Don't waste your vote on one of the two government parties. That's not going to change anything.
Yes.
After the primary, Cuomo said the progressive wave was, quote, just a ripple. Not even a ripple is what he said.
Thank you, Mr. Hawkins. Ms. Miner.
Thank you. I, too, want to thank the League of Women Voters and all of you being here in the audience at home for taking the time to own your democracy. You know, I'm a lifelong Democrat and the former mayor of the city of Syracuse for 8 years. For 8 years, I spent time understanding, trying to work with the system, through the system, around the system. It's broken. We need to have real reform in this state. I worked with the people of my community to solve real problems, and we did. Highest graduation rate in 10 years, innovating our infrastructure, focusing on substance, not optics, and speaking truth to power even when it was politically unpopular. But New York State isn't solving our problems. We're not even allowed to have discussions like I had here with my colleagues, and I consider them colleagues. We're not allowed to have public decisions. If you elect me, I will end three men in a room governing, obviously. But I will also close the political anonymous LLC contributions and stop the dark money and the pay-to-play economic development. And I will rebuild our state's infrastructure, and I will bring open and accountable and transparent government to Albany. Because that's the kind of government that I believe in, that I worked as a mayor for 8 years, and that's the kind of government we all deserve. If that's the kind of government that you want and you want to send a message, I respectfully ask for your vote for me on row I and the Sam party. A vote for one of the major party candidates just will continue the unacceptable status quo and unacceptable results that we are all having now.
Thank you. Thank you to all of the candidates, the media panelists, the college staff, and our league volunteers for making tonight's debate happen. A special thank you goes to Jennifer Wilson, the State League's Legislative Director.